is Upfront on the Voice of America. My name is Jackson Vunganyi. Thank you so much for joining us today. Ugandan legislator Matthias Mpuuga served as an election observer during the recently held U.S. elections. Reflecting on his experience, Matthias, a former leader of the opposition, says that he was impressed by the level of independence displayed by electoral workers in America, highlighting it as a cornerstone of a transparent democratic process. And as Uganda looks ahead to its 2026 general elections, Mr. Mpuuga tells me that he's calling for critical electoral reforms to ensure a free, fair, and credible election in his homeland. In this conversation, we'll delve into his observations from the U.S., his vision for Uganda's democratic future, and the challenges he believes are essential for electoral integrity. One of the most influential politicians in Uganda right now, Honorable Matthias Mpuuga, you're here in the U.S. We just had an election, and you're here as an observer. I want to get your reflections so far, how things were, your observations, what lessons you learned from observing the elections, and how do you see these lessons applying to Uganda?
Well, Jackson, first of all, I'm happy to be here. It's been a very, very good experience observing the difference between a democracy at work and then the imitations we do for democracy back home. It's a whole world of a difference. First of all, I missed out on the early activities because we had issues in parliament back home. So I missed out on polling day activities. So I arrived on the following day. Mm-hmm. But it's been a very good experience. In fact, I'm still into the experience tomorrow, but one, I'll be involved in observing the counting of votes in one of the counties here in Maryland. It's been an experience that votes can be cast, mm-hmm. then stored, and then counted after a couple of days. You do that in Uganda?
And people respect the results.
And people respect the results?
Yes.
It's quite amazing. So it's been a very good experience mm-hmm. because we have been reaching out, speaking to actors, politicians, civil society, party gurus, and nobody speaks to the kind of issues that informs the elections back home. I have not seen the military patrolling streets, polling stations, polling centers, mm-hmm. electoral areas, or I've not even seen an electoral official trying to breathe down their opinion, voters or politicians. It's a whole different game. Mm. The level of independence of the electoral officials is most disarming because they're simply going about their constitutional duties mm-hmm. and nobody's pushing them around or trying to intimidate them, telling them what to do, mm-hmm. and everybody respects them. That, for me, is an eternal lesson as how the U.S. remains the biggest democracy and therefore an example for all and sundry. Mm-hmm. Of course, the biggest complaint home over the past so many elections is the independence of the Electoral Commission. I was disarmed to learn that each of the
counties,
each state has own electoral commission, and nobody from whenever, from wherever is breathing down that electoral commission.
So there's no influence coming in from
The state
on how the election is run.
Exactly, and that's
Something that you would love to see for Uganda?
I have had a conversation.
Is that tenable?
It should be because it's all about goodwill. One of the things that's going on, for example, like you observed in your preamble, Uganda is having an election in a few months coming, is that some of us are proposing very, very robust electoral reforms. And part of it will be to empower districts. The district will be the center, it will be the juxtaposition for, that what is done at the district should be final. You don't have to refer to Kampala.
You just send the results.
You just send the final result.
To a central body.
Exactly. And whatever is announced there is final. It's one of the proposals we're trying to make to empower a returning office of a district to have the final say of that polling result.
Now, those seem like really great ideas. Why do you think are being practiced in Uganda right now?
Because the whole idea by democracy, the bulk of Africa, remains aspirational. And that's why there must be a group of actors from Rova. We respect the value tenets of democracy, which don't simply observe and admire, as we always help to action those kind of possibilities. It is possible. All we need to do is to cultivate goodwill, to do some pushing, do some cajoling, and speak to all and sundry with respect to see that it's a very good thing.
So the goodwill would be on the stakeholders, especially so the people that are in power, I'm assuming, is that what you're saying?
Exactly.
The people that hold the resources and the levers of power?
Yeah, because those in power have the privilege of numbers, the resources, but also for them to stand, that's even risky for them, which to begin from now to try and cultivate a culture of the respect of the rule of law, constitutionalism, and then cultivate that kind of order across and over time.
So Uganda is about to undertake the same process in a year and a month, I believe, and about 13 months from now? Is that correct? So you'll be having elections. We know that from experience in the last elections, there was violence, according to reports, violence targeting mostly opposition figures. How confident are you that this is not a cycle that will continue and that you'll have a free and fair elections come next time?
Well, some people learn history to pass exams. Some people say history repeats itself. But I can only say for a fool, history repeats itself. But if you're the kind of person that wishes well your country, you must learn from the fact that whatever happened in the yesteryears has not helped us to move the next level. From my point of vintage, I see that Uganda is in a kind of political transition from a 40-year military dictatorship to a new thinking. That thinking must be preceded by a new way of doing things. And therefore, gearing up to the next election, we need to think that what happened in the last election does not augur well for building an enduring democracy, and therefore we need to change for our own good, that the bequest that we shall give our children and grandchildren is one of a democracy worth inheriting. And changing the legislation will be part of our endeavor.
You called it 40 years of a military dictatorship, but people will say in a military dictatorship, the elections are not held. What's your response to that? Well, we've seen elections in the last how many years? 20, 40 years in Uganda.
Every time we have held an election, the conception is that we learned from the past and therefore probably things are going to change. And the prospect of respecting the constitution hovers and then disappears. Then we're like, probably this is a mistake. There'll be change for the better. It's not happening. So that's why I'm talking not just about goodwill, that they push. We need to be pushing that the rule of law is respected, that the laws of the land are adhered to, and not the law of rulers. It's not going to come easy, that much, you know, that we got to do a lot of pushing, prodding, and including cajoling and speaking to the enemies of the country to really climb down and listen. The people prefer a free and fair process, not a process under the barrel of the gun, not a process where the military has the final say on the actual outcome, like it has happened in Uganda in many places. So it's not helped us a great deal. We have lost a lot of resources trying to protect an individual in power. These issues at some stage must come to table, and as leaders in the country, have a close conversation as to the possibilities.
In case you're just joining us, this is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. We are chatting with Ugandan legislator Matthias Mpuuga. Mr. Mpuuga, a former leader of the opposition, recently launched a political platform named the Democratic Alliance in preparation for the next elections in Uganda slated for 2026. He talks to me about some of the electoral reforms that are necessary for a free and fair election in his country.
You've been a member of parliament for over 10 years, I believe.
It will be 15 after
15
next
years.
Year.
Those are some of the things you've been calling for, including electoral reforms. But has there been any indication that the Electoral Commission or other government bodies are taking steps to ensure a free and fair election next year? And what kind of reforms would you want to see between now and the election time in 2026?
Ordinarily, those who have power don't see anything broken, because they're not in the kind of mood to undertake processes that will really undermine their stronghold on the state. Those who do not have power have a duty. One, to speak with one voice. Two, to mobilize the citizenry, to participate in pushing. The nature of African democracy is such that you must rise and push, such that those who have power and not willing to speak to the ills of their hold on power are compelled. Because that's not a personal duty. I am out, and before I came to Uganda, to America, I had indicated to Parliament and even put in an application to table reforms to amend the Constitution, to restore term limits in the Constitution, to change the structure of Parliament, to change the way we vote Parliament, to pave way for voting by Ugandans in the diaspora. Over 2 million Ugandans in the diaspora do not vote, yet their remittances...
That's a big voice, yes.
It's a big voice. Mm. They remit a lot of money to back home, to even allow other categories of people, the prisoners that are not on a death row, to vote because it is done in other jurisdictions, to even change a number of our electoral laws. For example, you know that over the last 4 elections in Uganda have been contested. But the form and the manner of their contestation has been skewed. I am making a plethora of proposals to make it easy for a citizen, for not to even to challenge a particular district, for example. If an election is held, there are areas that will say, I won in Masaka, I won in Chitugum. So when I'm challenging an election, I must challenge that area, that place.
Is that a level of transparency you honestly believe is possible?
We must demand for this transparency. The world never gives you what you deserve.
Yeah. You have to fight for it.
You must make a bargain and a hard bargain. So I am tabling a plethora of proposals for a hard bargain to the political class and those holding on to the state power. And I am going to be home to mobilize political groups, political parties, civil society, religious institutions to join this quest for these reforms.
What kind of safeguards would you like to see in the coming election period to protect or safeguard members of the opposition who have been previously targets of violence, whether state-sponsored or non-state-sponsored?
I think Uganda, as long as Uganda still claims to be part of the global family of democracy, there must be a push to have the military out of our elections. Like we observed here, I did not see anybody with a gun at a polling center or anywhere trying to influence the electoral outcome anywhere. So we want the military out of these elections. Secondly, we want to see the Electoral Commission empowered to act independently in these elections as part of the safeguard, to accept those reforms I'm talking about. So if you believe in a free and a fair process and you believe in democracy, transparency is inevitable. As long as you continue acting opaque, then you cannot lay claim to a democracy. You are simply organizing a selection, not an election.
Mm. Yeah. Let's talk a little bit about you personally. As at some point up until recently, you were the leader. You had an official title, leader of the opposition.
Of the opposition, yeah.
That is not a title that I've had so many societies have. What does that do, and what happened to that? Because you've been part of the news cycle in Uganda lately, talking about some connections to some, whether it's political malfeasance or money, it's related to money and stuff.
Yeah.
Talk to us a little bit about what happened there. Just give us an understanding of what took place.
No, we
and whether you're still part of the opposition party, the NUP.
First of all, we had a change of leadership sometime last year in Parliament, and it was smooth because holding on to public office is not a person to holder. It's supposed to serve common good. And when the changes happened, I was posted into the commission, again on behalf of the opposition, where I am still a commissioner of Parliament. The issues that you had in Parliament, I was part of the political maneuvering in the opposition because unfortunately in the opposition, there's a lot of backstabbing, and as long as one is interested in outmaneuvering the other or scared of the other, a lot takes place. And you had the allegations of corruption. Corruption should never be a debate anywhere. As long as an allegation of corruption becomes a debate, then you know it has no efficacy. It is simply political maneuvering, because corruption should never be a debate. When there's corruption, everybody should say, that is corruption. When it becomes a debate, then you know that is politics. Mm. That's what has been happening. Fortunately, I'm a veteran of these wars, and I am able to overcome them. We opened a new page. We are moving on. As for my involvement with NUP, legally, I'm still a member of NUP. In terms of involvement in the organization, no. Mm-hmm.
Are you still caucusing with them?
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. Because no longer feasible and possible for me to caucus with them. I'm surprised that they are in disarray. Because there's a level of clout, of experience, of knowledge that you add to a young organization when you're part of them. Mm-hmm. You don't have to be at the top, but when you're part of them, there's a bit of a difference. I think without necessarily blowing my trumpet, the difference is now visible. But in the coming weeks or months, I'll be clear to Ugandans as to the kind of political direction. But I remain part and partial over the opposition. Mm. I will not join the ruling party. I will never join them. I do not have their DNA. Our philosophies are different. But I'm still part of the big opposition in the country.
The big opposition family, so to say.
To cause change that we desire.
Honorable Matias Mpuuga, thank you so much for taking time to talk to us. Are you hopeful in the next election, before I let you go, in the next election in Uganda, that things will go smoothly?
I cannot commit. We have to push. There are no donations. There are no grants in politics. There are hard bargains. But I'm going to be part of that hard bargain to make the difference.
I like that. That's a good way to end this.
Thank you, Jackson, for having me. Nice being here.
That was Ugandan legislator Matias Mpuuga. Mr. Mpuuga is a former leader of the opposition. He recently launched a political platform named the Democratic Alliance. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back.
Up front on the Voice of America.
VOA Africa has a wide variety of programs for you. News, lifestyle, health, politics, youth, women, sports, we have it all. Our team is here working around the clock to provide you with all the updates. Tune in to our talk shows on the radio, television, and the internet. Make it a habit to visit our website at voaafrica.com.
Welcome back. This is Upfront on the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Ugandan lawyer Ivan Bowe was also an observer for the recently held U.S. election. He joins me to reflect on his experience and some of the lessons that he hopes to take back home.
Talk to us about your experience observing the U.S. election. Was this your first time observing the U.S. election?
Yes.
How did you go?
It was my first time to observe the U.S. election. And it has come with immense insights, immense learning from our experience back home, having been an actor and still an active participant. This was mind-blowing. The way the U.S. conducts elections, far different from the way we conduct our elections home. Mm. Battlefield kind of environment.
It's pugilistic.
and yet here, it is a civic and very civil activity.
Yeah.
Where people respect each other, where even to the extent of civic engagement, parents bring their children.
Teach them from a young age.
Yes.
Let me ask you, actually, let's get into... What does observing look like for an outsider when you're coming? What did you do? What are some of the activities involved?
Well, one, we managed to talk to polling agents. We had to go through that entire process. How do they identify that a person is a registered voter? How does a person register on the same day and vote and exercise their civic duty to vote? How do they deal with people that vote, but their addresses or identity is not yet verified?
No, they don't match
the provisionals. Yeah. And how do they deal with the ballot marking devices, not electronic voting devices, the ballot marking devices? So they're what we call challengers and poll watchers and observers. So it was such a beautiful experience.
So aside from what, I will not quote this person directly, somebody saying lack of goodwill, aside from lack of goodwill, what remains for Uganda to institute those type of reforms electorally so that you're able to have this free and fair and transparent election? Is it the lack of infrastructure? Is it resource-wise? Is it, as they said, lack of goodwill?
You know, Jackson, at times I sympathize with very many of my fellow citizens back home. You cannot solve a problem you do not know. And when your scope of appreciation of events is limited to what I've been experiencing over the years, ever since I turned 18 and therefore an eligible voter, it can be hard to comprehend that such things are possible. But if they have been possible in the United States and in other jurisdictions we've been in positions to go into in Europe, you realize that it is possible, and we just have to push. Those of us who have had the experience have to be messengers of hope, because we cannot afford to be a hopeless society if we want and desire better things for our nation.
Mm. Yeah. Now, you talked a little bit about poll workers, the people that work at these different precincts. How do you evaluate their role and of the volunteers in the U.S. Elections? And what do you think, you know, how would you compare that with Uganda? Who works at the polls, for example? Are they volunteers? Are they paid by the Electoral Commission? Do you trust that they will respect the voices of the people? Is that something that also needs to be reformed in the way you allow people who work at the polls? Just give us a little understanding into that.
The elections here are not just an event. It's a very organized and accountable, meticulous process. That I was in some of the interactions with the poll workers, I was told that people apply to become judges, to do that exercise. Mm. And it's not, the counties are in charge, so it's very decentralized, where a person wants to be accountable. But also, a lot is at stake, more than a president, voting for a president or voting for a senator or a representative. They vote on things as election boards, judges,
education,
magistrates.
Education boards. Yeah.
To bring it back to our audience home, you have a voice as a citizen to decide who becomes, let's say, your grade one magistrate in Nansana. Citizens choose a variety of things beyond
just the president and the
political
senator
leaders.
Yes,
they also vote on policy matters. A citizen is involved at every level. And I found a level of accountability, more so with, you know, being a lawyer, I also picked a lot of interest in the magistrates and the judges. Whereas the governor appoints, it's on the recommendations of the voters.
Mm.
So when voters, they say they must choose, let's say, four.
Four, yeah.
And there are five, the voters will send the exact number of four so that the governor has no...
Cannot put in their person.
Put in any person, but must appoint the four selected and elected by the people.
What kind of immediate reforms would you love to see in Uganda? Obviously, not everything can be fixed in the next couple of, 13 months before the election. But what are some of the low-hanging fruit ideas that you can borrow from the U.S. electoral process? Like you said, it's not an event, it's a process.
Yeah.
That could make the elections in the next couple of months more transparent than the previous ones?
One, I think we have to do actual and intentional decentralization of our voting or election process. And I agree we should manage it at the level of a district. And this is not rocket science. But to above all things, I think we must deliberately demilitarize or pressurize those in power to demilitarize our election process. So that...
Well, what do you mean demilitarize? Is the presence of soldiers at polling stations? Is the military involved in moving ballot boxes? What do you mean demilitarize?
I think the military in Uganda is involved at every stage. I have witness soldiers at polling stations with an AK-47. So the demilitarization is critical to us moving towards a free and fair election. Mm. And interesting is that elections, as I've said, they are not an event. But also, for it to be determined that it's not free and fair is as a result of very many small actions that when you sum them up, you in position to tell in the ordinary sense that this election cannot be free and fair, and therefore it is not free and fair. And these reforms are necessary, but also to the deeper issues of how the Electoral Commission comes into existence, how we as citizens should be participating in how, let's say, with the model that I suggest that we decentralize the elections management, that we should be in position to participate in how that election board of a district is actually constituted. And those people should be accountable to us, the citizens, not to the commander-in-chief, who is also a player in the elections.
So it feels like he skews the level, the playing field if he has a hand in appointing and the people who are actually overseeing the process.
And this is not only to target onto President Museveni.
Mm.
Because regardless of who comes, even post-President Museveni, with that kind of power, abuse is inevitable. So we have to be deliberate and push for these things because they are good for our democracy and they are good for our nation.
Mm. Yeah. What is the big lesson you learned before I let you go that you feel you're going to take back to Ugandans, especially lawyers? In every election, whether it's in Uganda, whether here in the U.S., I know lawyers are so busy during this period. What are some of the conversations you're going to have with your fellow members at the Uganda Law Society?
I think we as Uganda Law Society should be very active in using our vast knowledge to scout good practices, good legal practices that are exercised in such jurisdictions like the USA. For example, I interacted with members of the DOJ, Department of Justice.
Yeah.
Particularly focusing on voting rights, are Spanish-speaking voters guided and helped? Are they not disenfranchised? And considering our country and how we conduct our voting, we need to bring this home. I've also had an experience where there is a sample ballot. It's not the actual ballot, but you can have it as a citizen and even try out before the polling day on how you want to vote and who you want to vote, down ballot and on policy matters you want to vote. And I think this can be taken on by Uganda Law Society and the bigger coalition of...
As part of their social responsibility,
empowering civic engagement. Mm. And because an empowered civic community will definitely, in one way or the other, deliver you a proper democracy and will participate in an election and will make sure that that election is free and fair.
Ivan Bowie, thank you so much for taking time to chat with us and give us some of those interesting insights of your experience here in Washington, D.C. during the elections. Good to see you again.
It was a pleasure, sir.
Ivan Bowie is a Ugandan lawyer and activist. He joined me in studio. And with that, we come to the end of our show today. Many thanks to our guests and to you for tuning in. You can also stream the podcast on Apple and other streaming platforms. Let's connect again next week, right here on The Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi. Have a great week ahead, Africa.